You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by Director of Fun and Games, John Brazier. Hello, John.
Tom, how are you doing?
Doing good. Beautiful day. It's just been a beautiful time around here, hasn't it, John? The team has been playing well, and things are good when that happens.
Well, we decided we're going to wait till the team goes on a 9-game winning streak to interview our next guest. Figured that would be the best timing, right?
Yes. So,
It worked out accordingly, and now we've got Sam Fold waiting for us. And very excited to talk to Sam because if people don't know the life of Sam Fold, to me it's almost like – it almost has like a Forrest Gump, and I mean that in like a total positive way, in the sense that there's so many things going on in his life. A lot of people's Wikipedia page is tiny.
Yeah.
His is very full.
But you said the life of Sam Fold. It's not the life of Sam Fold. It's the legend of Sam Fold, which, Sam, I did not know, kind of your, especially on YouTube. There's there's some really great clips of you, making great plays. And then, there is one video called The Legend of Sam Fold. Does that humble you at all, or is it all true?
It's all true, and my family does a great job of maintaining that YouTube.
There you go.
And the Wikipedia page.
It's really, and like John said, we want to welcome, by the way, and we
thank
do want to get into that a little bit. But, I talked about everybody with smiling faces. I mean, how much, and I was saying this to some friends over the weekend, like, how much greater is it to win than it is to lose?
Yeah, that's an understatement. It's, can't help, you try not to... saying this a lot in the last couple of days, but you try not to ride the roller coaster too much. Like, you try not to get too high when things are going well and too low when you're hitting the skids a little bit, but you can't help but just kind of get a little bit more excited coming to work every day when you're playing good baseball. That's for sure. And it was cool to see this weekend the fans come out and support us, and you can tell that they're getting excited about the brand of baseball that we've been playing the last kind of week and a half.
And the funny thing is, when the team's doing well, I've been doing this 29 years, you've been doing it for 34 years, right? Yeah. So when the team's doing well, the promotions are better, right? You guys have the greatest promotions. When the team's not doing well, oh my God, your promotions stink, blah, blah, blah. The Fanatic gets ridiculed when the team's not doing well.
Never.
Well, not really. Fanatic never gets ridiculed.
No.
That's right.
It's the one
Teflon.
Constant.
Right. Well, you get one guy maybe calling it WIP. But, we're all geniuses when the team wins, and we're all idiots when the team
But you're right.
Is
it
losing.
Just it affects everything, Sam, right? I mean, it's the fans, the players, I'm sure, the vibe. How much different has that vibe been in the clubhouse, compared to 2 weeks ago?
It's been good. It's just it's a looser, a little bit looser, just a little bit more upbeat. Again, it's we try to preach like just being steady, slow and steady wins the race, but it's just you can't help but feel a little bit better vibe. And when things are going south, it's the air's a little thicker, and the little things that bug you, whether it's just the coffee in the clubhouse isn't your favorite, or you slept on the wrong side of the bed, or your kid won't sleep and doesn't let you get the rest you need to perform that night. Those things tend to bug you a little bit more when things aren't going well, and then kind of brush them off when you've won 9 in a row.
All right, Tom, we're talking way too much baseball.
But it's fun because we're winning.
I know. I'm kidding.
Happens.
But what I love about Sam when you read about him is that you had a nickname at birth, and you've acquired probably like 15 nicknames since then, especially throughout your baseball career. But you were born at 10 pounds, right?
Yeah, allegedly. I don't believe it, but yeah.
10 pounds, and his nickname, because he was so big, was Cool Papa Sam. That was his first nickname, and I'm sure we'll get into the other ones too. And again, you grew up in Durham, New Hampshire, in a really interesting situation where your mom was a state senator, correct? And your dad was head of the psychology department at University of New Hampshire, or?
Yeah, he taught for a long time. He taught for about 30 years at University of New Hampshire in the psychology department. It was kind of on the sensation and perception side, a lot of brain and vision research, like stuff that I still can't comprehend. But
And did he practice that on you growing up?
I don't think so, although maybe he did and I just don't know it. But he would he'd bring home like these literal, you know, like pig brains and pig, you know, different eyes that he'd come back and come back smelling like formaldehyde. And I'm like, this is just not for me. I want to like dig into this stuff, but I couldn't, I didn't have the guts, no pun intended, to do it. But yeah, that's what he did for a long time. And then he ended up his career as like a dean of the College of Liberal Arts there at UNH. So a lot of great memories growing up, kind of basically on a college campus.
Yeah.
Getting to play a lot of baseball and basketball and tennis and soccer all over those college facilities, which was pretty cool.
And then you also had the political end with your mom, right? So she was probably busy getting reelected or getting elected and doing campaigns and fundraisers.
No, she was always at least somewhat involved in politics. She just sort of started off in smaller time politics and was a state legislator for a number of years, at least a decade. And New Hampshire, for some reason, has the largest state house in all of the U.S. Over 400 members of their state legislature. So she represented a very small population compared to most state representatives. But she was very passionate about it from the beginning of her professional career. Took some time off when I was, you know, sort of in middle school, high school age, and then my sister's 4 years younger, and just took some time off to spend a little bit more time with us. And then when we got a little bit older, got back into politics and was a state senator for a few years.
Yeah, and then what fascinated me reading your story too, Sam, is, you know, we knew you when you got hired in 2017 as, Sam's going to be that liaison between, you know, he was a ball player and the analytics, and not knowing, you know, when you look, somebody's doing a nice job on your, whether it's your family or something, on your Wikipedia page, because some of those details when you were young that you really did take to baseball, first of all, and then also you were really interested in the math part of it, figuring out the
supposedly you carried around a copy of the complete baseball handbook. Now this says instead of a security blanket, so that was definitely your mom that's writing that, right? Or maybe your psychologist dad.
I don't know. Yeah, somebody threw me under the bus and revealed that to the public, but it's not false. I just had this like book that I was obsessed with, and all it was just a, you know, basically a book with all every active major league player. And
what was it? The baseball encyclopedia.
Well, I had that one too. That was harder to carry around. That was
We would take that to the beach, you know, when we were in college. We'd go down to the beach and just fire trivia questions at one another. I wasn't doing it when I was 6 years old, Sam.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I'm 5 years old. Sorry to offend you.
It's awesome.
Looking back at it, definitely a sort of funny, unique habit or hobby for a 5 or 6 year old, but it was just, I loved baseball and I was always kind of into numbers. So it was a kind of perfect marriage.
And there it is.
So did your parents push you towards baseball, or was that something that you completely did on your own?
Just loved it, really. Right. They gave me plenty of chance to play.
Right.
Like, my dad played high school baseball, but was not like a baseball fanatic. And my mom liked baseball, was a big Mickey Mantle fan growing up. And, but certainly they were not pushy parents at all. They were very hands off, and they just wanted me to do what I loved. And it just so happened that I loved baseball. And you grew up where I grew up, and there was a lot of energy and love for the Red Sox. And so, you know, that's part of how I got into, loving the game, just kind of turning on the Red Sox every night.
But you made your high school team. I know you went to two high schools. You made your high school team out of eighth grade, which is impressive in itself. But I always ask this question to professional athletes. At what point did you know that you had a special talent? And then at what point did you realize that special talent could actually get you paid down the road? Right? Because if you make the team as an eighth grader, you're like, wow, you know, I've got to be a pretty good baseball player. And obviously you had some great stats and records, you know, in high school and then get recruited to Stanford. So at what point?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a tough read for me. I felt like I was a pretty mature and realistic kid growing up. But I grew up in the state of New Hampshire, and I knew that was not a baseball hotbed. And I also happened to be that kid in Little League who had the mustache and was, like, fully grown. I was a big, like, 11- and 12-year-old. And so I knew that despite the success, it didn't really mean much. Like, how am I going to be when everybody else catches up to me? And looking at my parents, I assumed that everybody else was going to sprout well past me, which ended up being the case. That was the big question: was how are things going to go when the sort of playing field gets leveled from a physical standpoint? So I think, you know, there was a summer that I guess it was going into my senior year of high school where I got a little bit of a barometer for how I stood compared to the rest of the country. And I got to go to a couple national showcases. One was down at Clemson University, and one was over at in Long Beach, California, where the area code games are held every year. And that was when I got a sense of like, okay, maybe I can hang with the, some of the best in the country. And maybe, you know, that's when a lot of the sort of scholarship offers started to come in and to some really cool schools. And that's when I realized like, oh, maybe this, maybe I do have a future in this, despite the fact that I'm 5'9" and semi-athletic at best, and had some obstacles to overcome.
Ah, what an exciting time that must have been for you. Let's talk a little bit more about this. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. Philly's backstage. And this is just a fascinating story. And Sam, we've been doing this for, it's been like 4 years we've been doing this podcast, John. So it's really awesome when we bring people in and we track their success. And it's always fascinating. But yours. Well,
we find out things we didn't know, obviously. Yeah, yeah. And then sometimes, Sam, we'll have guests that just, we find out Rick Wise is coming into town. Oh, let's get him. And we know nothing about Rick Wise other than the fact that he threw a no-hitter and had two home runs in the same game.
His but wiki page is right, maintained by his
then
family.
Then we've got to go through Wikipedia and everything else. But it's been a lot of fun.
Listen, I always think this part's just fascinating. And, John, you already asked it, but it's because we always talk. It's like John and I were, you know, we were out of baseball when we were, 16 years old. There was not going to be a professional.
I switched over after Little League to lacrosse. Right. I don't know your case was.
I just started going to parties, but that
you're
was
training to be the fanatic.
Exactly.
Be the best friend of the fanatic. Sorry, best friend.
But so that just must have been really cool, Sam, when you go out west and then, you know, it's that time you're looking at colleges, you got heavily recruited from colleges, and it just must have been just very exciting. And where you had that little bit of confidence, it sounds like.
Yeah, I kind of had to pinch myself and go, is this for real? I mean, I felt like my parents did a great job of sort of keeping me humble, and I think really I'm really appreciative of the way that they raised me, and they're very humble people themselves. So I think I had no expectations. Really, I was education focused growing up, and I felt like regardless of where my baseball career took me, that the academic side of my life was going to really sort of help me in the long term, and that was a focus of theirs. And I ended up, you know, had some bumps in the road like we all did, but at least towards like my high school life, I felt like I became pretty focused on education, and I had no idea where the baseball stuff was going to take me, but when I got a chance to play with the best around the country and hold my own, it was like really confidence inspiring, and you start really dreaming big that way.
Yeah, and you know it's funny too. He went to Exeter, so again, you went to two high schools, right? Berwick, I think, was the first one.
Berwick, I went through eighth grade, and then I went to Exeter.
Then Exeter. So, Tom, I don't know if you know much about Exeter, but Exeter, there's a lot of famous people, especially a lot of presidents of the United States. So, normally, if you played baseball and now you're a GM, you'd be the most famous person, right, at Exeter. Yeah. And I don't even know this, but I bet you there's probably a handful of maybe business executives or...
Well, there's this gentleman who started Facebook.
Yeah, Jeffrey Zuckerberg. Or Mark Zuckerberg.
That's where I've heard it.
Yeah.
Well, this has got to be a trivia question coming up, right, John? I mean...
You know what? I've kind of led... I led the witness, and I'm trying to help him get at least one of the answers ahead of time.
You had a lot of colleges come after you, and you pulled a Ruben Amaro, and you went to Stanford, which we love that.
Yeah.
Was Stanford the greatest?
It was pretty cool. It really was. Amazing, amazing campus, amazing people. Talk about staying humble there. I mean, you have to. I think back to my freshman year, and I'm in the same freshman dorm as like Olympic swimmers and like the best water polo player in the world is like a dorm over for me, and some of the most brilliant people in the world are just like right side by side with you. So however good you think you are heading into your Stanford experience, it humbles you, which is really cool. And just a lot of laid back, awesome people there, and really cool. I mean, a lot of great baseball moments there that I had. We were lucky enough to be really good. So every time around this year, when I watch college baseball, it brings, you know, in the super regionals and the World Series to come next week, I think it brings back a lot of good memories there too.
And as a freshman, he was the starting leadoff hitter. How about that?
You started 4 years there, right?
Yeah, just sort of fell into a really good opportunity there. I mean, they had lost a lot of seniors from the previous graduating class, and had just a great opportunity to make an impact right away. So
yeah, so he leads off. He's a leadoff hitter as a freshman. In sophomore year, he led the Pac-10 in hits, breaking Stanford's single season record. Batted .375. Not so shabby there, Tom.
Not shabby.
But you kept going. How many were other guys on? I'm sure you had other guys on that team that went to the pros.
We had like, I think at some point, it may have been my junior year, I think our whole lineup, 1 through 9, depending on the day, depending on the lineup, were major league.
Wow, is that right?
Not just draft, but major leaguers.
Wow.
A couple of, John Mabry was on that team. It was in Philly.
Yep.
Ryan Garko had a pretty good major league career, was on those teams. Carlos Quentin was my year and a roommate of mine. And Jed Lowry still playing. You know, we had some really good good talent, a lot of good teams.
Well, I was going to say, how did you do? Did you not match those expectations?
Lost in the championship game my freshman year and my junior year. We were like in the semifinal my sophomore year. It was we were like the Buffalo Bills of college baseball.
Well, and then you get drafted, and this always fascinates me too. You get drafted by the Cubs, and you turn them down, which I love that. Like,
and then they were foolish enough to
draft
me.
Then
the
they
next
came
year.
Back, and so the next year they came and they drafted you. I guess you were drafted in the 24th round, and then you went back to Stanford, and then you got drafted in the 10th round. Does that happen often when a team will draft a guy, he goes back to college, and then they draft him again?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of anybody who that I'm sure it's happened before, but I figured that I had a chance to be drafted by 29 teams my senior year, and the one team that I didn't think was going to take was the Cubs. I played. I ended up playing in the Cape Cod League that summer.
And that helps a lot because obviously you're playing with wooden bats.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to play pretty well, and they kept like kind of offering me more and more money, more and more reason to go sign. And I just was like, part of it was coming off of a national championship loss. I was hungry to go back to school and win a national championship. And I just figured, well, worst case is I can go back and get my Stanford degree. That's always nice to have under your belt. And I felt like I had better. My junior year was at the time maybe my worst of the 3 years that I'd been there. And I thought maybe I could go back and play better. And all those reasons just led me to go back for my senior year. But no, it wasn't like we left on bad terms, but I just figured, all right, we tried that. We'll try somebody else. I figured would be the Cubs stance, but it was really neat. And I'm glad that I had a chance to play in the organization.
All right. So let's go through some of your nicknames, right? What was your first nickname in that you remember in professional baseball?
Oh man.
Because you've had a million of them.
I don't know. I think some of them just came from others that they never even never called me. What was it? There was like a crash test dummy.
Yeah, that's all that one.
Yeah, and there were. I don't know. The ones that stick out were more when I got to the big leagues. But you tell me.
Well, obviously Superman was the one that I know, Tom. Yeah. You wanted to bring up, and I guess that was on the one. I guess you made you had a reputation for slamming into walls and catching the ball and kind of being reckless in a good way.
Can you be reckless in a good way?
as long as you catch the ball.
Reckless probably not the best word. But you know what's funny, Sam? We used to, Tom, remember this, back at the vet, way back when, we had Mage McDonald. I don't know if you remember, Mage McDonald was a coach here, a coach for the Whiz Kids, and then he was a longtime ambassador. He used to... and he was probably, what, his 80s, Tom, at this point, 70s? Oh, yeah. Late 70s, 80s?
Sure.
He would go out at lunchtime at the vet, and a bunch of us, guys in the ground crew, Tom, myself, some other guys in sales, We would line up in the right field corner when the team's away in the on the warning track. Major would have a fungo bat, and he'd be just beyond second base, and he'd hit a ball, and he was good enough where he could hit a ball, you know, perfectly, where you had to run, sprint, and hopefully he'd hit it right at the wall. So we're imitating you, basically, making the great catch, and then you throw it back, and next guy goes. And it was, like, the coolest thing in the world, right? I can't imagine what you're, like, doing that for, you know, as a, for a living, right? Like, it's a little more nerve-wracking.
Not something that we would practice. There were no versions of that that I can remember. Those are the things that you save for the game, yeah.
Did you ever think about being an outfielder's coach? I mean, or not necessarily that, but also now, even in the role you're at, do you tend to look at outfielders and how they play defensively?
Maybe just a little bit. Okay. I feel like I have a little bit better feel from sort of evaluating how guys are doing out there defensively and analyzing plays. I probably just have a little better instinct for it, but I have a ton of confidence in Paco and the group down there. But
can you play, like, if there's a guy you're thinking about drafting and you know he's a good outfielder, but the guy is maybe too reckless? Can you be too reckless out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point there's probably some injury risk that comes about from that. I it's funny because I did have a lot of injuries in my career, but a lot of them were not from diving into walls or diving into fences and, you know.
On the ground.
I seem to have survived most of those at least.
Okay, yeah.
But, no, I think you love those guys and you want them on your team and you're generally, like, happy to take on that whatever injury risk that comes with. Like, it just there's something I think that's some sort of cultural add that comes with that. You know, a little bit more energy in the dugout and the clubhouse when you have those guys.
For sure. We have Aaron Rowan was our
legend. That
was the big one.
Well, here's the Toronto Sun wrote when you played for Tampa against them. It says, Fold ranks in the top 10 in batting average, runs, and triples, and also leads the AL in stolen bases and YouTube hits, especially video hits for a catch in Chicago diving towards the right field corner onto the warning track that has been set to the Superman theme. Right? So how many sports writers are writing, you know, including YouTube within their article?
Well, and you're also dealing with you're at Wrigley, so is that fence is hard. It's a brick wall, so of course it's hard. But is it a little bit more of a challenge than maybe some of the other ballparks?
Yeah, I look back and I shake my head at like how idiotic I was to run into those walls sometimes. Yeah. I mean, the ivy's a little thicker than it might look on TV, but it's ivy.
It's not pillows.
Yeah, so there were a couple plays that I look back on and go, well, what was I thinking? But I think I had this sort of youthful, like, exuberance. A ball would get up in the air, and I would block out everything else. It would be me and the ball, and I would kind of just try to go get it at all costs. And if the wall happened to get in the way, so be it.
So be it.
And is that more exciting than, like, making a great diving catch? Is that more exciting than hitting a dramatic home run?
Yeah, because part of you is just wondering if you just knocked yourself out and got concussed. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that when you hit a home run.
Right.
Definitely on par. For me, the home runs were few and far between, so I like the home runs, too. But yeah, there's something about it gets the crowd involved. I mean, I'll never forget, like, one of the first plays I made at Wrigley was a ball that I ran, like, running catch up against the wall, and I spun and threw a guy out to double him off at first. And the noise that I heard, like, running off the field was like nothing I've ever heard in my entire career. And it was like a super cool moment.
Oh, it fires up everybody.
It does.
And I love the some of the tweets that were sent at you around that time. Sam Fold was once intentionally walked while in the on-deck circle. I think the Red Sox check under their bed for Sam Fold. And Joe Madden's favorite was Superman wears a Sam Fold t-shirt to bed.
Is that true?
I'm not validated that. No, I don't know.
That wasn't in one of the movies. John, let's take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Sam's career as a baseball player and then how he came to the Phillies. So we'll be right back.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
And we're back again with Sam Fold, and he is still in one piece. We've been talking a lot about slamming and defenses, but, you know, your career, your time in Tampa, and we always think of Tampa. They always seem to have a great development system, a great scouting system. When you were there, were you with a group of guys, a homegrown guys? I know you came from the Chicago organization, but could you sense that organization and the way they develop players back then?
Yeah, I think the one thing that stood out then, it still does really, is just the starting pitching in particular. We had a really good rotation. My first year there, it was David Price, it was James Shields, it was Jeremy Hellickson. And then as we kind of, as you know, James Shields was the first one to go, and then David left, and it was just sort of next man up. And as soon as Shieldsy left, it was Alex Cobb stepping up.
Matt Moore. Kazmir in there?
Kazmir had been
was
there
later?
I was earlier there before. Yeah. But it was just amazing the depth that they had coming up through the system, and it just, as unfortunate as it was to lose key guys like that, Chris Archer, I mean, it was just like next man up, and it was incredible that we didn't miss a beat when we lost some really good starting pitching in Shields and Price and others. So, yeah, you felt like you were part of something special, and it was neat to just go to a kind of an underdog organization that got to go up against the Yankees and the Red Sox all the time, and we went toe-to-toe with them quite a bit.
One of the cool things, too, Tom, is that Sam played for Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the one, if you remember. I remember that the games were – where that was in –
it was in Seoul and in Tokyo.
Right. Because yeah. I remember, like, the games would be on, like, at 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning, right? And that team, if you remember, had you guys had the Mensch on the bench, right? Tell the story about that, because that got a lot of notoriety at that time.
We had a bit of a stuffed animal mascot, not quite Fanatic level. But it was right. One of our players, Cody Decker, had – I don't even know where he got this thing, but it was, like, this life-sized lump of a Mensch, like right. This guy with a, you know, a hat, and he was wearing blue and white and black, kind of that matched our jerseys, and he would just hang out with us. We put him in the dugout and put him on the plane when we went from Seoul to Tokyo, and he was
Did you get a lot of odd looks in the airport and when you're going around?
Plenty. Yeah, right. Yeah, I thought we may have to buy a ticket for him, but they let us carry him on. But he was. Good. Kept us happy and nice and light in the dugout.
And you guys did great, right? You guys were the underdog team that year.
Yeah, it was really cool. It ended up being the last playing experience of my life. This was just 5 years ago, and we went undefeated in the first pool and beat Korea and beat the Netherlands, and then went over to Tokyo and played good baseball over there. Didn't quite get to the semifinals. Mm-hmm. It was back in the U.S., but we competed really well against some of the best.
Awesome. Exciting. Well, now the transition from big league ball player to the front office. Just talk about how that kind of came down. I'm fascinated, too, that it happened so quickly. And that happened with Ruben, too, right? When Ruben retired, he pretty much jumped right into the front office as well. And that's how it happened with you, right, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of a fortuitous turn of events. Like, I had been in touch with Matt Klintak and as a player, my agent was in touch with them, and we were still talking about playing, and that was just after the WBC experience, but I was coming off of a shoulder injury and wasn't sure I was going to bounce back, and Matt had sort of in passing told my agent, like, hey, whenever Sam's done playing, would love to just talk to him about sort of life after playing. I didn't know Matt at all. I didn't know anybody in the Phillies organization. A few months into the summer, I couldn't throw the ball from one end of the room to the other, and realized my career was probably over, and I'd rehabbed plenty and just figured it was enough. So went and explored other opportunities, the post-playing opportunities, and the Phillies were one of the first places that I called, just knowing that we had heard great things about the organization and, geographically made some sense between, with me and my wife being from close to the Northeast, or at least in the general vicinity, and got to know Matt and the rest of the group here, and loved every conversation that I had, and felt like it was a really cool opportunity to take advantage of.
So did they create that position for you? I know when you were, Tom alluded to it earlier, that you were the liaison between the front office and players, right? More on the analytical side. You're basically the one that can translate, I guess, like, right, the analytics to the modern ball player. And you're almost just from retiring, yeah, right? So yeah, so they could relate. But was that created for you?
It was, and I credit Matt for coming up with it, because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I wasn't ready to really jump into a coaching role and four small kids, and wanted to get into something less than an everyday, like, you know, 81 games on the road type experience. And Matt was really great about it and created that. So, and as a player, you just don't know what goes into the whole operation. Like, you don't have any sense of the scale of the work and the effort put into making this thing run.
And you might even have a bias as a player saying, these guys never played. What do they know about the game? They're telling me, you know, this and that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you're actually the perfect person that, you know, someone who's had success in as a player that can, who also knows the analytics end.
Yeah, no, I think that was part of it, just having played. And I think that people, the right sense of perspective and humility, I think they can communicate with players regardless of their playing background. But I think it definitely gives you a little bit of a leg up having come right off the field. And it's difficult. It's challenging trying to explaining concepts that might be foreign to players and staff. And, you know, new things, people don't necessarily accept new things easily, especially players who have gotten to the big leagues without it.
Right.
So introducing new technologies and new sources of information was a challenge for sure. But I loved the job description when Matt wrote it out and thought it really fit me well. And it was a great couple of years doing it.
Was it tough? Like, I know some players are very receptive to it, but, you know, going back in the past, like, I imagine if you had to talk to Cliff Lee was one of those guys that just wants to throw it, doesn't want to study, doesn't want to do anything. He's has his own confidence in his own, you know, arm, and he doesn't want the information. Whereas some guys want as much information as you can give them.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess you have that fine balance.
Yeah, you have to sort of take it case by case for sure. Never slamming things down people's throat is never a great approach, especially established major leaguers. So tried to take a sort of passive approach, develop relationships, develop trust, and then really allow players to initiate some of the conversation.
And that was 5 years ago. So do you sense that in the 5 years, and that was pretty new then, are players, this next generation, not that, you know, are they more receptive now that they were 5 years ago?
I don't think there's any question.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just the way that players are growing up these days.
Yep. And
the average 16-year-old now compared to even 5 years ago is exposed to so much more. There's a Rap Soto in every bullpen, every indoor facility that they go to. There's a hit tracks in every batting cage. They're familiar using terms like WOBA and weighted runs created plus and WAR. Those are just like more and more common pieces of terminology that it's really cool. I mean, it's not, and that's the expectation, especially guys who come through, you know, pretty prominent Division I college programs now. It is very much the expectation that we're able to speak that language and provide resources that can help them.
And again, it's analytics is really just information, right? It's just you're giving information, you're giving them the tools, and they can use it what they will, right? Yeah. As you mentioned, not everybody. So everyone keeps saying, well, analytics, this team's too analytics driven and this team's too old school, right?
But isn't that
of a misnomer?
A radar gun is analytics, you know?
Right.
There have been radar guns out there for 50 years, and 60, 70 years, and I would imagine when they were first introduced, some people said, I don't need radar guns. Like, I can tell with my eyes how hard this guy's throwing. And oftentimes people are good like that. But it's always, at the very least, it's a sort of validation for what our eyes are telling us. But there's just so many. So, yeah, it's only gotten the level of detail with this technology and the information available is greater. But, yeah, batting average, RBI, some of the more traditional stats, those are still analytics. You know, we're still using that information to analyze performance and analyze development, and we just have found that there's maybe a little bit more sort of descriptive and predictive information that's available.
Yeah, due to the technology. 2017 was also another big year for you, Sam. You starred in your first Philly Fanatic commercial. That was. Did you ever see this commercial, John?
I'm trying
classic
to think of it. No.
It really is. It was the hot dog launcher. Sam's on the truck at spring training with the hot dog launcher, and he's measuring the analytics of how far and how fast.
You had great launch angle timing. Great launch
wow.
angle. Yeah. No, your numbers were money. Best yeah. I've ever seen.
That's right. Yeah.
Did, true. Did the bomb squad get called out for this one?
No, there was no bomb squad.
We had the bomb. We had the bomb squad called out one time on doing a Phillies commercial with hot dogs.
Here, here at the ballpark.
We had to clear the ballpark.
We won't go down that road again.
Right.
I had a blast. That was fun. First and last commercial, as far as I know.
We got to get you into another commercial, Sam. Yeah.
There wasn't a razor with like green fur in there that he's about to use in the bathroom.
The Derek Jeter commercial. A classic.
All right. So the last, and we'll wrap this up, and then we'll go to the test. Quiz, not a test. But, you know, obviously you're now the general manager, and you're working under, you know, arguably one of the most esteemed baseball guys, Dave Dombrowski. What's that been like for the past, a couple of years?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, did not have any history with Dave other than obviously knowing about him. Got to know each other really quick. It was funny. We didn't actually get to meet each other in person until, I don't know, 2-3 months into our relationship. It was a lot of phone calls and Zoom calls, given that we were, you know, it was the winter going into the 21 season, and we were nobody was in the ballpark, and Dave was down in Nashville in the off season, and I was up here. So, he's been tremendous to me from the very beginning, and has been very intentional in the way that he's taught me so much. I mean, has obviously seen and done a lot in this game. And how can you not listen to a guy who's got a couple World Series rings under his belt? And what's really cool is that he wants that third one, I think, as much as he wanted that first one. He is committed. If he was any more committed to this than he's now back then, I'd like to see it, because it just is the drive to be better and to put a winning playoff and World Series winning team out there is really special. So he's seen so much that nothing really throws him off, and I've been able to just soak in a lot of information from him from the get.
Awesome. Well, we love to hear that, John, right? And I'm sure the fans love to hear that too, and we didn't doubt it for a minute, but you guys are crushing it. So let's take a quick break, John, and we'll be back for the Samfold test after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's Quiz.
And we are back, Philly's backstage. And Sam, you ready? You know, it's been a while since you were at Stanford, so you probably haven't studied for a test in a while.
I have not, but I'm ready.
You know, Sam, how old are your kids, by the way?
They're 6, 8, 10, and 12.
All right, they're perfect right in that fanatic zone. So if I think we set the bar 6 out of 8, Tom.
Six out of eight.
You know, pretty easy bar to hit, we think.
Yeah.
Because it's about his life. He has the inside track. What does he win? And I think he should win something Fanatic related towards his kids.
Yeah, well, let's go with the new book that was just released, thanks to Xfinity. And we gave that away last week, Fanatic About Reading. It's the Philly Fanatic's Doggy Tale. Can you guys have a dog, Sam?
We do not have a dog. We're not quite ready for that.
Oops. But, maybe if you get this book, the kids might be asking
right,
for a dog.
Let's think about other gifts.
All right, maybe there'll be another gift.
Or maybe I'll just flunk this test and make sure I don't get it.
Do you have the Bryce Harper bobblehead doll that we just gave
out? Other books. Fanatics has other books. You're going to autograph different book for every one of
there
his
you
kids.
Go. That's perfect.
How about that?
Perfect.
All right. Yeah, we can't give him disincentive to win, so here we go. All right, Sam, are you ready?
I am ready.
As I mentioned, you went to Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire. Which of these celebrities did not go to Exeter?
So, I knew this was coming.
Yeah, so again, one of them, we already know one of them. A, U.S. President Franklin Pierce. B, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg. C, singer Marilyn Manson. D, Peter Benchley, author of Jaws.
Which one of these does not belong?
If you need a lifeline, Sam, you can go to Tom. If you need
I'm usually not a good lifeline, but I think I got this
one. If you need a lifeline, you can go to Tom.
I'll hang on to my lifeline. Marilyn Manson? Unless I'm wrong.
Gotta be right.
Marilyn Manson did not. All right. And we get to the second one. All right.
You're hurting over there.
Does this get progressively harder?
It does get a little harder, yes. You went to Stanford. Which of these celebs did not go to Stanford? Okay. So this might be a little harder. It's not because I just looked at this question. I wrote this a couple of, probably about a month ago. Actress Sigourney Weaver. That's A. B is Weird Al Yankovic. C is actor Ted Danson. And D is author John Steinbeck. So it's either Sigourney Weaver, Weird Al Yankovic, Ted Danson, or John Steinbeck.
Man, I loved Weird Al as a kid. I don't think he went to Stanford.
He did not go to Stanford. Now, he's got to be a genius because, look, the parodies he comes up with, right? He's made a living out of it.
Absolutely.
Right. So he's not a big...
But Sam Malone went to Stanford. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Big Cheers fan.
There was a million. Do you know one of the...
I'm sure there is.
Herbert Hoover was one of the first classes of Stanford.
Who cares? Sam Malone went to Stanford. Who's Hoover? Come on.
Grapes of Wrath, John Steinbeck. All right, so you're 2 for 2. You were drafted in 2004 by the Chicago Cubs. We mentioned that. And one of your first minor league teams was the Peoria Chiefs in 2005. Which one of these guys was not a teammate that year? Who was not a teammate that year? Nomar Garciaparra, Kerry Wood, Jerry Blevins, or T.J. Farrell?
That's pretty good. That's a good list. I wish I was young as T.J. Farrell, but I'm going to say T.J. Farrell.
T.J. Farrell. See, oftentimes I put a computer guy in there, or I'll put somebody that whoever our guest is doesn't know, and then we'll say Bob Tonin, and then they don't know that Bob Tonin and runs Sam, our computer.
Sam's still young. When you ask that to Rick Wise, he's trying to think, okay, 60 years ago, right, who was my teammate?
Yeah. Right, but actually, they're pretty good.
Nomar, if I may interject, Nomar rehabbed. Obviously, he wasn't like in A-ball then, right. But he was did a rehab stint.
And, so it's a little.
I grew up a huge Nomar fan.
He was a good guy, too, wasn't he, Sam?
Great guy. Yeah, he was a great guy. He grounded out his first at bat with us and came in the dugout and was like yelling, swearing, throwing things. And everybody, we're just like dead silence in the dugout. And then he gets over by the helmet rack and starts cracking up laughing.
Was he one of the first guys to really do the
huge batting glove?
With the batting glove and adjust the batting glove, come out there and right. And I think a lot of people imitated Nomar. It's the first one I remember.
I went to Japan MLB All Star Series a few times, and Nomar was on one of those trips, and he was great. Yeah, he got a kick out of Fnatic and. Riding a bus, he was just, real down-to-earth, good guy.
Yep,
yeah,
great guy.
All right, we mentioned you were called Superman when you were in Tampa after being traded there in 2010. What is Superman's Kryptonian name? Okay, Superman's Kryptonian name. Is it Kal-El? Is it Jor-El? Is it Zor-El? Or is it Kal-El?
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
I wrote that a month ago.
A month ago. Were you at a bar when you wrote this?
I wrote that one.
Do you know the answer?
I do know the answer.
Can you at least repeat the first three?
It's Kal-El, Jor-El, Zor-El. You don't want to hear D, Kal-Bell?
Kal-Bell.
I'll go with A, Kal-El.
Kal-El, he's 4 for 4.
So is Jor-El the dad?
Jor-El is the dad, and Zor-El is the uncle.
Nice.
Very good.
Yeah, that was good.
And you still have a lifeline, by the way, with Tom Burgoyne over here.
I'm not good.
All right. So, 5, you played for Team Israel in 2017 World Baseball Classic. He already has this one. Which player on that team brought the team mascot with him, the bench? And I was going to say Ty Kelly, Cody Decker, Jason Marquis, or Ike Davis, and you already mentioned Cody Decker. So
that's a winner right there.
You are now 5 for 5.
5 for 5.
I promise you did not give me these questions in advance.
I did not. What was your batting average in the 2014 wild card game against the Royals? Your batting average in the one game wild card game 2014, was it 250, 500, 300, or 400?
Oh, man. I know I had 2 hits, and now I'm just trying to remember if I had 4 at-bats or 5 at-bats. It was a long game. I don't really like to talk about it because it was a
tough one. Yeah,
I think I went 2 for 5. I'm going to say 400.
400. So that means right now he is 6 for 6.
He's a math guy.
He's already won the Fnatic books signed for his kids.
Yes.
Right. Just not the dog one.
Not the dog one.
Right. All right. Here we go. Let's see. You read Moneyball in 2004 while recovering from a torn labrum injury. Correct. Mm-hmm. In the movie, what actor had to lose a lot of weight? Since he was told he was too fat to play one of the characters. Was it Chris Pratt, Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, or Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah, Jonah Hill played Paul DiPodesta. That would be my guess.
No, it's incorrect. Chris, see, it was kind of a trick question because I threw on a couple. It was Chris Pratt who played Scott Hatterberg. They said he had to lose a lot of weight if he wanted to be.
And Hoffman was the manager, Hal, right? Played Hal in that.
Okay. Yeah, but
well, I apologize to Jonah Hill. If he's
he could still use the stand to lose a few pounds, but
That was Tom Burgoyne. Just make sure that was not Sam Fulton or myself. We got that on the record. All right, your last question, see if you can go 7 for 8. I don't know why I came up with this question, but I did. Who is the oldest manager at the time that you played under? Okay, who is the oldest manager at the time that you played under? Was it Ron Gardenhier? Was it Bob Melvin? Was it Lou Piniella? Or was it Joe Madden?
Wow.
So Ron Gardenhier, Bob Melvin, Lou Piniella, and Joe Madden. And I have to tell you, the gap is 10 years, so it's pretty substantial. Wow. But you're in the moment, so you're not thinking about how old your manager
you're
is.
Not. So it's. I feel like if I get this one wrong, I'm in a lot of trouble.
Well, I'm going to give you a big hint right here. Okay, it's not really a big hint, but it's a big hint. Tom and I went to Puerto Rico for Carlos Pierga's charity softball game. Probably what 20 years ago?
Yeah, a long time ago.
I think Jen was pregnant with one of your sons.
Probably
because she couldn't go on the trip, I went.
Yes.
So next thing you know, we go to the beach. I'll tell this real quick. And I went body surfing out in this Puerto Rican beach, right? And I caught this great wave, and I'm flying through the waves. And my hands and my arms crash into someone's legs. I end up talking to this guy for half an hour.
And he's the answer to this question.
He thought I was a scout, and I think whatever team he was with, I think I screwed up that organization for many years because I was talking, you know.
I'm going to go with Sweet Lou.
Sweet Lou is correct. Lou Piniella. Yeah, I didn't recognize Lou Piniella when I was talking to him, and I think I set back Seattle. He's like, tell me about the prospects. You know, what do you think about this guy? I'm like, oh, this guy's great. And it was kind of this and that.
Yeah, he listened to you.
I was getting all kinds of stuff.
John and his baby trunks and, you know, Lou's taking notes. I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't
My Birdwell so. Beach britches, he wasn't taking me seriously?
Oh, that's funny.
Well, thank you for playing. Your parting gift is, again, some Fanatic books. So.
We did good.
It's been a pleasure.
Sam, thanks for coming in. Yeah, this is good. You came all the way. We're looking at your office is literally about 50 feet away.
It was worth the trek. It really was.
The long walk. But we really appreciate it. Let's keep the winning going. You know, John and I we're loving it. We're all loving it.
So are we. We're going to do our best.
Yep.
Yeah.
And last question. Did you see the Fanatic streak, by the way?
I did. I did. I was expecting security to go and tackle you, but they let it.
You know what? The Fanatic's been doing this for a while, and every once in a while we think, should we have security go out there? But then it's like, well, then, you know, it may not be the best look.
It's a lot.
No, we don't want to, you know, make them look
bad
either.
What I was impressed with was the third base umpire. I think it was Troncoso, I forget. Yeah. Edwin was his first name. Just straight faced. He wanted
no parts.
I mean, he was all business.
No parts of a naked Fanatic. Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame him. All right, Sam. Thanks again. We'll catch you around, John. Another great show.
Sounds
good. All right, and we will see you next time on Phillies Backstage.